Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is a show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Can you imagine having a job that required you to live on an island and your primary purpose there was to make sure ships don't run into the land? It's definitely not a job for everyone, but for some people, it's perfect. Spence is one of those people. He's a modern-day lighthouse keeper. This is a bit of a different kind of episode for this podcast. Sometimes when I come across opportunities like this, I think, okay, I would find this really interesting, but would other people find it interesting? So when I saw I might have the chance to do this one, I posted it as a poll in the Facebook group, and the vote was unanimous. Everyone wanted to hear what it was like to be a lighthouse keeper. So here we are today. And yes, it really is interesting. Spence told me all about the different aspects of the job and what he has to do each day, and the fact that he works 7 days a week. But it's okay because he loves his work. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you'd like to support the podcast and keep it going, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And now, here's Spence, the lighthouse keeper. Spence, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Happy to be here.
And I should mention to our listeners, the noise that you hear in the background is not, it's not an air conditioning unit. It's not anything that we can control. It's the weather where Spence is at the lighthouse. And can you tell us what kind of weather is going on right there now?
Yeah, definitely. We're looking at sort of higher winds than usual than we have now. We are heading into you know, mid-December, late December, early January. We do get a lot more rough weather in this time. But right now we're looking at between 25 and 30 knot winds, which is pretty considerable. And then they're also southeast winds, which means they blow right on my front door. So it's pretty hard to escape all the noise, but you deal with it.
That's the nature of the business. No problem at all. When you're up in the top of that lighthouse, how high in the air is that?
Well, Entrance Island, the location that I'm at currently, is not a very tall tower. It's actually only 19 meters from the water in total height. So it's actually not a super high tower. It's maybe just over three stories.
Let's kind of set the scene. I know you're on an island, and the name of it is Entrance Island, and it's in the Georgia Strait, which is in British Columbia, Canada. You're kind of across the strait there from Vancouver. Are you like maybe 15 miles, 20 miles from Vancouver?
Yeah, no more than 20 miles. We can actually, on a clear day, you can see Vancouver from the island. So yeah, the way it's situated is Vancouver is on the mainland, and then there's a large island just to the west of the mainland that's Vancouver Island. And Vancouver Island actually houses Victoria, which is the capital of BC. And then it has another larger port city called Nanaimo, which is partway north of the island. And where I'm located is I'm actually about 8 miles out of the Nanaimo Harbor, where the lighthouse is situated to help guide people into the harbor. Because Vancouver Island and the mainland are actually separated by a whole slew of smaller islands, it's actually fairly dangerous to navigate to go up the Georgia Strait and then find where the entrance is to the Nanaimo Harbor. So the lighthouse is situated just outside of the harbor to show boats like, okay, now this is where you would go to head to your port side, and you can now go into the harbor.
Obviously, the name Entrance Island, that makes sense.
Yes.
How cold does it get there in the winter?
Well, for anybody who's ever sort of lived in, say, Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, the weather here is actually quite nice. I mean, it's not Florida nice, but it's we don't see a lot of snow. As a matter of fact, it's very rare that it goes below freezing. So maybe once or twice a year, we'll see a little bit of snow that actually sticks for a day or two, but we see a lot more rain than we do snow. So temperatures right now, like the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing lows of about 4 degrees Celsius to about 9 degrees Celsius. And I'm sorry, I apologize. I have no idea what that is in Fahrenheit.
Well, I've got a handy little Fahrenheit Celsius converter here in front of me, and I know 4 degrees Celsius is around 39 Fahrenheit. So still just above freezing, and certainly colder than what we would prefer here in Florida. That's for sure.
Yes. Well, I still go out and do the weather in my shorts. The gentleman that I work with, the principal keeper, thinks I'm crazy. He says you should never go out in this weather in shorts, but I generally wear shorts even in this type of weather. So I really don't find it that cold, and it's not bad here where I'm located. So I'm lucky. Not all light stations are nearly as lucky to have such glorious weather.
I know this is a pretty small island. What else is on the island? I think I saw where you've got actually 7 buildings. What are all those buildings?
Yeah, there's the island itself is only the light station. There is nothing else on the island. So every building on the island has something to do with the light station in some form or another. So the buildings that are on the island, there's the principal keeper's house, so where the principal guy lives. And then there's the assistant keeper's house, which is where I'm currently staying. There's the tower itself. There's a boathouse and a shop. So like a workshop type area. There's a generator building that houses our electrical generators and a machine shop. There is a small garden shed. There's a recycle shed. There's a hazardous materials shed. And then there's one more building, which is a little bit unique, and that is the water cistern. And that's pretty much all the buildings that are on the island.
Is this something, to do a job like this, is it something you go to school for? Or how do you learn, how do you get the skills to do this?
Well, I seem to remember, I think it was like maybe grade six that you learned about clouds, and you learned like the different types of clouds, the alto cumulus and the whatnot, all the different type of stuff. But when you apply for the job, there's really not a whole lot of schooling or anything you need ahead of time. What you do need is you need your radio operator certificate, which means that you are licensed to be able to use the radio on the airwaves in the world. And everybody who uses a marine radio anywhere in the world is actually supposed to have a license. A lot of people don't, but you're supposed to have a license to use the actual radio. So you need that before you can get the job. And then the only other thing that you are required to have is your first aid. You must have a first aid certificate. Those are the only two things that you need before you go into the job. Everything else is pretty much on the job training.
And I know a lot of what you do is weather related. And actually, we should mention, because you mentioned this before we hit record, that in a few minutes, maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes from now, you're going to have a weather report come up on the radio, which is mandatory, and you need to listen to that. So I say we just keep recording and listen to that as part of the podcast here. That'll be interesting, too. So people can be ready for that when it comes up.
Right. Weather is one of our primary jobs that we do every day. And by every day, I mean 7 days a week. So every single day. And the weather is reported every 3 hours from 3:30 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. And you have to report your conditions that you are actually seeing right at the moment. And those conditions consist of several factors. You have to report the skies, whether it's cloudy, partly cloudy, overcast, obscured, whatever. You then need to report your visibility, how far it is that you can see, if there's, you know, maybe a fog bank or something along the lines. Sometimes you just can only see 8 kilometers or 10 kilometers, but you have to report the distance that you can see, anywhere from 15 kilometers to I can't see anything at all. You then report the weather. So the weather itself, whether it's raining, whether it's snowing, drizzle, anything that's actually like a physical type of weather, you would report that. Then you have to go into wind and you report wind speeds and wind direction. So you need to be able to use the tools on hand, which for wind direction, we look at a flag and you use the flag and a compass and you can figure out which sort of direction the wind is going. And then we use instruments for wind speeds to tell us, you know, within a general few knots, exactly how fast the wind is going. And the last thing that we need to report for mariners is the water itself. So is the water wavy? Is it calm? Is there small waves? Is there really big waves? Is there swells? And these are all things that we need to report in the full weather. And the last thing that we would be reporting on is stuff that we might see in the distance. So if it's not bad on Entrance Island, it's not raining or anything along those lines, but I can see it's raining over Vancouver, I would report rain showers to the east distance. So you kind of have to tell about everything that you see around you like pretty much all the way past the horizon and further.
And when you're doing this reporting, you're doing this over the radio, so any boaters in the vicinity would be able to hear this. Is that right? That's who your audience is?
No, the way it works on our end is we report to the Central Coast Guard Agency, and then the Central Coast Guard Agency takes all the reports from all the different light stations. There's 27 light stations in BC. They take all those reports and then they put them online. So you can go online at any time and you can view those reports from all the different light stations telling you exactly what they're seeing at that hour.
All right, well, let's talk about your kind of day-to-day stuff. Now, you mentioned someone else is on the island with you. It's just the two of you, or is that right?
Yeah, there's mandatory two people per station for safety's sake. You can't have a person alone on a station. If something were to happen, you need a second person in case of any kind of an emergency. So there's always two people. For somebody who actually lives on the station in a permanent spot, so they are set up, they live there, and that's their absolute career, they call that like permanent, you can bring your family. So you can bring your wife, you can bring your children, you can bring whomever, you know, whoever you want to have live with you. So there's a minimum of two people, maximum of however big your family happens to be.
And each of the two people have your own house.
Yeah, there's only one station in BC that's a combined residence, and that's only because the station is way out on a crop of rocks, and it's a single building that has the tower and the residence and everything all in a single building. Everywhere else is situated either on an island or on a peninsula, somewhere that there's actually a little more space, and there's usually three dwellings in each location. So you have a principal keeper's dwelling, you have your assistant keeper dwelling, and then you have a spare dwelling for when people come to work on the island, for like carpenters or engineers or anybody who needs to work on something, they can live in the spare house. So yeah, you're completely separate from, you don't need to live with somebody in the same living space and drive yourself nuts.
Okay. So it sounds like you have essentially the same day-to-day job as the principal keeper, but you guys kind of alternate hours. Is that how it works?
Right. Well, the days, it depends on the principal. Every principal is kind of different. The principal is your boss. The principal is the one who sort of oversees everything on the island. And they're the ones that sort of dictate how things are worked out. And generally what happens is there's a morning shift and then there's an afternoon shift. And the morning shift is the one that has to get up at 3 and they do all the reports from 3 to noon. And then the evening shift would do everything from noon to 9:30 to the end of the day. And the gentleman that I'm working with, he's not big on waking up early. And I love waking up early. So I do the morning shifts because I enjoy it. I like to be up at 3 and it gives me time to do whatever I need to do. And I like it when it's dark. And yeah, it's all good. So it works out nicely in that regard.
This episode is sponsored by Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. When Jeannie and I go out to eat at some local restaurant, one of the things I love to try is a curry dish. I just love it when a chef can get that perfect balance of spices. It's one of my favorite meals. But even better is to have an amazing curry meal without having to go out, like the one I had recently. It was cauliflower and chickpea coconut curry with steamed jasmine rice. And even though it was created by a professional local chef here in Florida, we enjoyed that meal right here at home, thanks to Cook Unity. And you know what else I love? All the prep and cooking is done for me ahead of time. So all I do is just choose the one I want, and 2 minutes later, I'm enjoying a tasty hot meal. It feels like I'm one of those wealthy podcasters with a chef on staff right here at home. Cook Unity meals arrive fresh. They've never been frozen. All of their packaging is earth-friendly, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. Oh, and you have to try that coconut curry.
Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to your door. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code WHAT or going to cookunity.com/what.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
Sounds like a perfect match. How many days a week do you work? I mean, it's got to be done every day, right?
Every day. So it's not like a job where you do 5 days and then you get your weekend off. You have to report the weather 7 days a week. Now, that being said, it's not like doing the weather is the only thing that we do. There's lots of other jobs and tasks and whatnot, whether it's landscaping, lawn mowing, maintenance, machine work, like whatever. So we do that type of work from Monday to Friday. And then on Saturday and Sunday, we relax. We take it easy between our reports and then just do whatever it is that we want to do, you know, on your own.
What's a typical day like? I know you said you're up and working at 3, but what is it that you do? How do you fill that day?
Well, for me, I do a lot of research. I've been doing a lot of research. I do have a YouTube channel, and I am new to this job. I've only been doing this for a little over 2 months now, and there's so much to learn, so much interesting things to know, not just about lighthouses, but about the Coast Guard, about marine living and boating and all this kind of stuff. So I do a lot of research. So in the morning, before it's really too early to go out, I'm on the computer and I do some of my own YouTube stuff. I answer emails and communicate with other lighthouse keepers and whatnot. And then after your 9:30 report is when you go out to do the outside stuff. So whether it's as I say, there's a lot of lawn here. You have to mow all the lawn in the nicer weather. The buildings need maintenance. We're in a rough area. You do get sometimes wind, you get rain, you're exposed to the elements. So stuff needs to be cleaned regularly. You need to paint stuff regularly to maintain a certain look. The island is a heritage site. So it is required that everything is kept to a certain level of maintenance. And that's all the responsibility of the two people that are on the island. So I'll work something semi-physical from like 9:30, from 10 to maybe about 3, and then have lunch in the middle there. And then after 3, for me, is just free time. And I do whatever, make my dinner, read a book, watch something, play a video game, and then go to bed.
What about groceries? I mean, you're out in the middle of the strait on this tiny little island. You can't just run down to the store and pick something up when you need it.
Nope, that's very, very true. We are, one of the things that takes a lot of getting used to is understanding that if you run out of something, you're out. There's no running to 7-Eleven for milk or anything like that. You need to understand that you have only a certain amount of time that you can get whatever you need. So we get groceries once a month. And what happens is the Coast Guard actually uses a helicopter to bring all the groceries out to the different stations in a certain area on a certain day of the month. So there's like four different light stations in my group. And then the helicopter will go out on a day and they'll deliver to all four of those stations for the one day of the month. So what we do is we buy all our groceries online. We use whatever service happens to deliver to the main office because we have to send all of our groceries to the main office. And then it gets accepted by the main office and then held there for a couple of days until the chopper's ready to bring it out to you.
Have you ever run out of food?
I have not. Now, I've been lucky because I knew people who were in the business before I started. And every single person that I've talked to, both before I started and after I've started, have told me that their first month of employment, they ran out of food. So I went into this with my biggest concern being, oh my God, do I have enough food? So I made sure that my first month I had enough food.
If it were me, I'd probably have a spreadsheet out with each day and each meal and have everything, a whole list based on that.
Well, I did that before I started. When I knew what I was being sent somewhere, I sort of sat myself down and I said, okay, so how much can I eat in a week and what sort of things can I do? Like, for example, I would think if I go and make a big chili, a big pot of chili, that pot of chili should last me maybe 5 days, that I can have one meal of chili for 5 days. And then I know what I like for breakfast. I kind of eat the same thing for breakfast every day. I'm very particular that way. So I know if I have to eat 30 days of breakfast, how much I need to make sure that I bring that with me. So I kind of did that before I got my first posting. And so it worked out pretty well. Funny thing is, for the second month that I was here and I was supposed to get my groceries, they actually didn't come because there was an emergency and the helicopters were needed somewhere else. And so for 4 days, they didn't come. And I was getting low on, that's the radio they're going to be doing there. I don't have to do this one, lucky for me, but I do have to listen. So they're going to be doing all their reports. The weather is really not very good for the radio.
So what we heard are those are other nearby keepers talking about their weather report?
Yeah, from other stations.
Okay.
So they'll come back on. Yeah, the weather's really bad right now, so it makes the signal a little bit difficult to hear. Oh yeah, see there? They have big waves out in Victoria right now. They got six foot moderate waves at the moment. So yeah, they're seeing some pretty big winds out Victoria at the moment. So anyway, that was a weather report. It goes pretty quickly. And as I say, I didn't have to report on this one. So
what actual maintenance do you have to do? I mean, it's kind of, I'm sure it's probably a common misconception that, you know, if you're a lighthouse keeper, all you got to do is go up and make sure that light's on, right? I mean, but obviously there's, as you've mentioned, there's a lot more to it than that. But what kind of maintenance is actually involved with that big light bulb?
Well, I oddly enough, all of the stations, the actual lighthouse itself is completely automated. So that's everything from the power, it uses solar energy, uses a large bank of batteries, and the light itself is all, it uses a sensor to detect how light, how dark it is, and it all comes on automatically. And even to the point that if a bulb burns out, there's four extras already in the mechanism to replace it, and it will replace it automatically.
So there shouldn't be any situation where the light is, where it goes dark, obviously, since you got a lot of spares.
Right. Well, a bulb is, because it's not, again, like, technology is really different now from what you see in the movies. And movies generally look at an era that's, you know, 100 years ago, and they use big, giant incandescent bulbs and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Now, a lot of the lighthouses, they'll use LEDs in a small, tiny little bulb that the lenses reflect all the light so well that it actually doesn't take barely any power. And bulbs will last 3 to 10 years. So the likelihood of a light ever going out is pretty slim.
And how far away can that light be seen? If it were on a clear night.
It's actually, you're really lucky. I just did a YouTube video about this like last week. So there's an actual formula for figuring out how far you can see from because the Earth is curved, it all comes down to how it works with the horizon. So the light travels, there's a formula that is the square root of the distance divided by a number which represents the curve of the Earth equals how far that light will go before it hits the horizon. So entrance is 19 meters tall. And when you plug that number into the formula, the light will actually travel for 16 kilometers before the curve of the Earth becomes a problem. And anything further than that, you can't see it if your eyes were right on the water, like if you're at water level. So because you are not at water level, you're like 6 feet tall, you're on a boat, you're whatever, that distance actually goes a little bit further. And the entrance island lighthouse is rated at 15 miles for how far you can see the light. Now, if you're, say, at the top of Cypress Mountain, which is in West Vancouver, which is maybe 40 kilometers from where I am right now, if you're at the top of the mountain and it's an absolutely crystal clear, beautiful day, you could probably see the light. But you don't need a lighthouse when you're on top of a mountain. It doesn't help you. The idea is to see it when you're on the water, right?
In order for ships to be able to identify which lighthouse they're actually looking at, are there different colors or different types of lights, or how do they identify what they're seeing?
Yeah, every lighthouse has a little bit of a variation to how they're set up. And for entrance, it's quite simple. It's a white flashing light every 5 seconds. So it's a very simple setup. But there's lots of different variations for different lighthouses. And it could be maybe a 3 second flash, or a 4 second flash, or a 10 second flash, or it may be two really quick flashes at a 5 second space, or it could involve colors. There's red light, there's green light, there's blue light, there's all these sort of combinations, and each lighthouse is fairly unique. So depending on what you're seeing on the water will tell you which lighthouse you happen to be looking at.
That makes sense. Do you have any, is there any concern about security? I mean, do you have weapons there? Or I can't imagine there would be any incentive for anyone to try to intrude on that island, but Well, is there any thought about that?
It's funny because I'm Canadian. I'm a Canadian guy, and you know, all Canadian tends to, you know, the joke is like, how do you make a Canadian say sorry? And the answer is you step on his foot and he'll say sorry. So as a Canadian, it's kind of, we don't look at violence, or we don't look at this protection as our first train of thought. And I know that it does happen. A lot of my American friends are like that, where it's always like, I need to be protected. I need a gun. I need, you know, all these things to make myself feel safe and whatnot. But I've never felt that way here at all. Entrance is close to the mainland. We get kayakers coming out to the island. People come from Nanaimo in tiny kayak boats. And because it's government land, it's crown land, so it's not like it's all fenced off and you can't go there or anything like that. The public is welcome. We have visitor logs and we have all this kind of thing. You know, we like visitors. Visitors break up our day. So, yeah, I don't think the idea of having to protect yourself ever came up. And if there was ever an emergency situation of any kind, I mean, one of our primary jobs is we are emergency relief. That's the whole point. Somebody goes over in the water and they have to get out. They come out of the water. We are the ones who perform emergency services on them. We offer them a place of security, a place to stay. So yeah, it's not about protection. It's about helping. So
that's good. That's a good outlook.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me, and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great, and I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25WHAT to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25WHAT.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must-listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I was surprised to find this out. You're married.
Yes.
How often do you get to see your wife?
Well, my life with my wife is a little bit is interesting. We've been married for about 2.5 years now, and we've been together for over 5. And in all of that time, we spent a lot of time apart. She's from the Philippines. I was working in Hong Kong, and I would spend 3 months in Hong Kong, 2 weeks in the Philippines, 3 months in Hong Kong, 2 months in the Philippines. So not seeing my wife for long periods of time is pretty regular for me. I've been on this location now for a little over 2 months, and my wife is coming out for the holidays. She's coming out for Christmas. So she'll spend a week out here on the island with me, and then go back and do whatever she does for her life. Now, because I'm still new and I don't have a permanent location, it has been discussed between us that once I have a permanent spot, once I've been given a place that they say, okay, this is where you live, then likely she'll either come and live with me, or it'll be a spot like this where it's easy enough to get to a port where she could live somewhere close by and then come and visit on a semi-regular basis. So, and that works for both of us.
Yeah, I guess if you're both happy with that, I mean, I guess it takes a certain type of person, I would imagine. Not everyone needs the constant companionship of another person to get through the day. So it sounds like that it kind of works out pretty well for both of you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy with it. And as far as I can tell, she's pretty happy with it. It's not like, you know, when we get together, it's like, hey, how's it going? It's okay. Like, you know, we're always like really excited to see each other, and we spend a lot of time together, you know, in the time that we do spend together. So yeah, I think it's healthy for us. It's not, I think it just comes down to the fact that neither one of us have that insatiable need to have that company, you know?
I got a couple of questions from listeners. Nivia asks, when storm or hurricane waves crash against lighthouses, do they ever suffer structural damage?
Well, okay, so I have a story for you, and it's a pretty good one. Triple Island is the scary lighthouse in BC. It's the one that's way out from, it's in the middle of the ocean, it's on a pile of rocks, and it's that single building where when it gets really, really stormy, waves go right over the entire building. And the gentleman that I'm working with right now, he used to work at that station. And one time during a extraordinarily extreme storm, he actually had full-size trees come through his window in his bedroom. So I guess what happened was a log boom or something got disconnected from a tug, and several of the large logs went through different windows in the building, and one of the windows was his bedroom and came very close to actually hitting him as well. So it does happen. It does happen. The several of the stations that are quite open to the elements and require a lot more care than others. There's another island, Green Island, I believe, where they have ropes between all the buildings. And if you want to go from one building to another, you have to use the rope. You connect yourself to the rope and then using the rope to go from one building to another, because they've lost cows off the island, like full cows.
Just from being the high winds, they just get blown away?
High winds and big waves. Yeah. Yeah, it can be pretty scary.
here's another one. Zach has a couple of questions. Has your lighthouse ever proven critical to someone's safety? And then his other question is, are lighthouses mostly nostalgic now, not really needed because of GPS?
I personally have not had any dealings with an emergency yet. So thank goodness for that. Let's hope that, you know, I don't have to deal with anything too crazy. It would be good. But the principal keeper here has saved about a dozen lives in his 26 year stint in being a lighthouse keeper, 9 of them on this island alone. So there's been boats overturned or people in the water in emergency situations.
It sounds like you're due for something.
Yeah, I don't want to. No, I don't want to do. So yeah, there have been emergency situations, and they have saved lives. So it's a good thing. It's a very good thing. What was the second question?
Are lighthouses still needed? Well, with GPS, do you still really need them, or just nostalgic?
Well, a lot of the bigger boats, like obviously cruise ships, ferries, a lot of the large cruise ships and the carry boats and whatnot, they all have GPS and everything to tell them exactly where they are. But there's something about the physicality of being able to look out the window and see a lighthouse and know where you are. It just is something that I don't believe will ever go away. It's just something about being on the water. Now, there are a lot of smaller boats, like there's a lot of pleasure boats, there's a lot of fishing boats and whatnot that don't have all the fancy equipment. And they do still rely heavily on buoys and lighthouses to show them the right way to go. So it's not something that will be going away anytime soon. And that goes for lighthouses all over the world, which is why lighthouses did eventually go to automation, because they are still needed and that light is still essential.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not putting people at the station.
If you actually see a boat that runs aground or even capsizes, what would you do? What do you do when you see something like that?
First thing you always do immediately, right away, is you call Victoria. You call the base and you say emergency situation. You tell them everything that you can about what's going on, because getting emergency relief to anywhere is minimum half hour, 45 minutes. And half hour sitting in the water is deadly, because the waters here are cold and they will kill you quickly just from hypothermia. So very, very important. You must get the word out to emergency services, because even if I pull somebody from the water and they require emergency services, there's only so much that I can do on the island. Yeah, we have an AED and we have warming blankets and we have all these kind of things, but our abilities are limited to, you know, what we can do. They still need to go to a hospital somewhere, and that will take time. So yeah, number one, call head office immediately. Number two, do what you can to assist in any way you can. Always keep your eyes on the situation. Keep a radio handy so that you can report any changes. If it's safe to go out and get whoever is in trouble, then do it. But we're technically not allowed to leave the island. We can't get in a boat and go out and get them. We're not allowed to. It's part of the charter for the Coast Guard. There's certain rules for getting in a boat and going out to get someone, and we can't actually do that. So,
man, I can imagine that would some situations would create kind of a moral conundrum there. If you see somebody in the water, they're not that far out in the water and they're drowning or their boat's going down or something, and you have to stay on the island, that'd be a tough decision.
It's a tough call, and I understand that being put into such a position, I can understand why in many instances in the past, a keeper has just said, screw this, I'm going out, I'm getting them. I can't let somebody die while I'm watching them, right? Yeah, it is a tough call. It's a very, very tough call. You don't want to just let somebody die when you can physically do something to save them.
Right, but I can understand the rule, though. I mean, then at that point, the lighthouse itself is unmanned, and, you know, there could be other problems that result from that. So,
well, exactly. That's what it all comes down to is, you know, what's the bigger risk? What is the, you know, where and like anything, it also comes down to liability, right? You need to be sure that everybody is covered safety-wise and everybody's butt is covered in the long run, because anything that does happen, there's going to be an investigation, and it's always like that for any sort of incident.
Sure.
So,
Yeah. Is there any wildlife on the island? I know it's too small. There's probably no bears or anything, but would you see anything else?
Well, when we say wildlife, we do usually think like bears, deers, tigers, stuff like that. But this place is way too small. But I'll tell you, you can fit 400 or 500 sea lions here, and they are loud and smelly. Holy smokes. And we have a family of 5 sea otters that live under one of the old docks that is abandoned, and they live under there. We have 4 eagles that sit on our weather equipment and screw it all up, but they sit up there every day and, you know, look out on the water or whatever it is they do. So yeah, there's lots of different things on the island. We have lots of snakes, lots of small birds, lots of seagulls, no rats. Not one. There's not one rat on the entire island. So that's kind of cool.
Wow. All right. Well, I just got a few more questions as we wrap this up. What do you like most about this job?
Whew. Well, you know what? I love the isolation. I am not going to lie. I'm tired of cities. I'm tired of crowds. I'm tired of driving to work every day and traffic and all these kind of things. I just love that, you know, I wake up, I do my work, I read a book, I relax. I'm not stressed out. Nothing. It's pretty nice.
And I can imagine right now somebody is probably listening to this on their way to work. And they're sitting in traffic.
And enjoying themselves immensely, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, and they're probably saying, you know what? I didn't have to get up at 3 o'clock this morning either. So there's a different job for everyone.
There is a different job for everyone, but on the flip side, just to think about it, I go to bed about 7. So it's not like I sit up till midnight and then have to get up at 3. That would be ludicrous. I would die in like 2 weeks, right? Like, you can't live on 3 hours sleep. But because I'm not obligated to keep your time, I can create my own schedule. I get a full 8 hours sleep. I wake up rested and happy, and I have no problems with it because I am not adhered to I don't need to conform to the social time schedule.
Right. Yeah, your schedule is more based on when you have to do weather reports and everything related to the job, as opposed to social constructs. Yeah. And yep. And I would imagine you don't get bored because you have full internet access.
I have full internet access, but in reality, I don't use it that much for entertainment. I like doing YouTube videos. I enjoy bringing this information to the public, and I like sort of corresponding with people through email and comments and that kind of thing. That's fun. But for entertainment, I read. I've been here 2 months. I've read 6 books. It's amazing. You know, I've played 3 Mass Effect games at like 30 hours each game in 2 months. That's amazing, you know, to have that kind of time to be able to do whatever you want is absolutely phenomenal.
Is there anything about this that you don't like? Or anything that you would change?
You know, I don't think so. I really don't think so. Because everything that I need, I can buy online. If I need new clothes, I can go to walmart.com and I can buy something and ship it to head office. They'll send it with my groceries. Like, no big deal. Nothing is priority. Nothing is rush, rush, rush. So yeah, I don't feel the need to change anything at all. For me, it's an absolutely idyllic lifestyle.
It sounds like this is a good job for someone who may be somewhat of an introvert, you know, since there's not much face-to-face human interaction. Would you say that's the case?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are certain things. You need to be able to get along with the person that you work with. And that is essential because there's a lot of things that you have to do together. And so it's not like you never see anybody. You need to be able to do that. You do also need to be able to use the radio. You can't feel adverse to speaking up on the radio and using communication equipment with several other people. And there's no privacy because the only privacy that you have is if you have a cell phone. But a lot of the stations, you don't even get cell phone service or you don't have internet service. Your only communication is on a party line where everybody can hear you. So there's like no privacy at all.
Someone listening to this and they're somewhere near Entrance Island, is it okay for them to just come and visit? Or should they contact you ahead of time? Or how, if somebody wanted to do that?
Well, yeah, somebody can contact me. I do have a Facebook page that, you know, I check it regularly and whatnot. People can get a hold of me through there very, very easily. And they can let me know that they're coming around and we'll be ready. We'll give them a tour. There's a picnic table if they want to sit down and have lunch and, you know, all these.
They better bring their own food though, right?
Yeah. I'm not sharing mine. Yeah. It's nice. Actually, one of the nice things is if you are ever visiting a station like this is a piece of fruit, because we don't get a lot of fruit. Fruit only lasts a week and a half in the fridge and then it's no good. So, you know, it's nice to get an apple every once in a while or an orange, a little bit of fruit. So bring some fruit for your lightkeeper.
That's a good plan. Yeah. What I'm picturing maybe might happen at some point is instead of waiting for the helicopter every 30 days, you might eventually have a drone delivery. Has there been any talk about that?
Drone delivery would be amazing, but I don't think I'm not sure how it would work. I mean, if the drone was able to go the 10 miles from Nanaimo to the island and back, then that might work. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure how far drone delivery would actually work.
Yeah, that's a long way to go. And the weight of a lot of food or clothing or whatever it's delivering, probably not economical at this point. But I could imagine at some point in the future that might be something that works.
I mean, if I really, really, really wanted to, I had somebody ask me before if I've ever had a pizza delivered. If I really wanted a pizza, I could get it delivered. There's a service. There's a guy in Nanaimo who has a boat, and I can call him up and I can say, dude, I really need a pizza. Can you bring me out a pizza? And I'll have the pizza delivered to his office. He would put it on his boat and he would bring it out to me. But it would cost me $150 to do that. And I don't need a pizza $150 bad.
No pizza is that good.
No pizza is that good. But the option is there. So in the same instance, like my wife will end up going to Nanaimo. She'll be bringing some stuff. She'll be catching a ride with this gentleman. It will cost her $150 to come out to the island. But she can bring a whole bunch of stuff with her and whatnot. So those options are available. And if money was no limit, then yeah, whatever. You could get you can get stuff delivered anytime you want, but better to just, you know, get the helicopter to do it once a month. It's easier.
Right. Yeah, that pizza would be like the ultimate impulse purchase, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I know you mentioned your YouTube channel. You're also on Facebook. We will have, and I looked at your YouTube channel. I haven't watched all the videos yet, but boy, each one seems like it goes into a particular aspect of island lighthouse keeper life. Like, how do you, you know, what do you eat and, you know, what do you do every day and stuff like this? So that's really interesting. So people want to check that out. And so we'll have links to your YouTube channel and your Facebook page as well on the show notes for this episode, which it's going to be whatwasthatlike.com/40, because this will be episode 40. Spence, anything else you want to add that we haven't talked about?
No, that's wonderful. I think we got just about everything.
Well, I appreciate your time and hope you have calm seas there today. No bad weather.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Hey, I just wanted to mention something before we head out the door. I got an email from a listener that really made my day. You might recall episode number 30, which is titled Travis Lost His Son. It's a really heart-wrenching story about a father, Travis, whose 16-year-old son, Brandon, died from an asthma attack. It's really sad, but it actually has a positive ending. So if you haven't heard that yet, you really should go listen to it. It's episode number 30. Well, Michelle listened to that episode, and it prompted her to send me this message. Just listen to the episode where Travis lost his son. I have listened to every podcast you have posted, and you are such a great host. You let people speak, and that's really what people who go through terrible things need, just someone to listen. I was feeling pretty down today. This made me appreciate life more. Thank you. And I think that's awesome. So thank you, Michelle, for those kind words. And now for you, yes, I'm talking to you right here in your ear now as you listen to this episode, I'd love to hear from you too. If you have any comment at all on the episode you just heard or any of the previous episodes, I'd seriously love to hear about it. The easiest way is to send me an email at scott@whatwasthatlike.com. I guarantee I'll read it, and it's pretty likely I'll reply to it as well. Or if you want, you can go to the website and click on the contact button and just send me a message from there. Or how about this? You could record a little audio clip, which is pretty easy to do on your phone now, and send that to me in an email. Maybe I'll just play it right here on the podcast. If nothing else, you can at least join the private Facebook group at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. However you decide you want to contact me, I'd love to hear from you. See you in 2 weeks.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.